I consider verbal abuse to be one commonly understood category of emotional abuse. And this is where the abuser is using their words, potentially spoken out loud. Of course, now it could be written, over text, chat, any sort of technology facilitated abuse. And that's really using hurtful words to control and hurt their the victim.
This is episode number 585 with Christine Murray. We're talking about healing from emotional abuse. Christine is going to talk to us about this important topic, and I'm really excited to bring this to all of you, whether you've experienced emotional abuse or you're the partner of somebody who's been emotionally abused. This is a must listen. Hi, everybody. I am Sandy Weiner, and welcome back to Last First Date Radio, where we believe it is never too late to go on your last first date. And to support you on your journey to lasting love, I've written two books. The first book is Becoming a Woman of Value, How to Thrive in Life and Love. And this book was written because I just saw too many women not valuing themselves. And I was one of those women at one point in my life until I did this work. And so I really wanted to share all the steps that I took to value myself more, to learn to set boundaries, to communicate more effectively. And there's just so many great tips in that book. And the second book is really focused only on dating. And this one is called Choice Points in Dating. And this is for anyone who wants a handbook on dating. We often feel like we're not a choice. We don't know what choices we have. We don't even know where to begin. So many people come to me and they say, I don't know how to get started. So this will take you from mindset about dating, how you think about it, how you choose your partner, how you know when to stay, when to go, how you handle first date conversations, how you, you know, just the whole way through to your last first date. And both of these books are available on Amazon for Kindle or paperback. And every week I bring you a tip from the Woman of Value book. This week's tip is number 24, which is practice saying no. This has come up a lot this week with one of my daughters. She's working for somebody who is really taking advantage, and she's not saying no enough. And she's starting to now because he's really driving her crazy. But we need to learn our yeses and our nos and be comfortable saying no when the answer is no, this does not work for me. And so if there's an area in your life where you're not saying no, where you're saying yes when you mean no, it's a very common thing. So don't beat yourself up, but practice saying that doesn't work for me. Here's what works better. And before I bring Dr. Christine Murray on, I just want to invite anyone who's not yet a member of my awesome Facebook group to join us at Your Last First Date. It's one of the only Facebook groups that I have ever seen on dating and relationships. And it's only for women over 40. We have some women who are younger as well, but it is really a place of positive support. There are very few groups that are not as kind as our group. There are groups that just bash men. I mean, I am a member of some of those groups, and I'm constantly surprised that they're posting screenshots from dating apps and putting people's names out there. We have very, very strict guidelines. I'm all about the boundaries, and it's just so important. So join us at Your Last First Date. And now for my guest, Dr. Christine Murray. She is the director of the Center for Youth, Family, and Community Partnerships at the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. She has worked with clients who have been impacted by various forms of family violence, including current and past intimate partner violence, childhood physical and sexual abuse, and emotional and verbal abuse. She is also the author of Triumph Over Abuse, Healing, Recovery, and Purpose After an Abusive Relationship. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much, Sandy. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to be here.
So let's talk about emotional abuse and how it impacts the people who survive it. Just first, let's start with a definition of what it is.
Right. So I think in terms of understanding what emotional abuse is, we need to first step back and think, what is abuse in general in the context of an intimate relationship? And then we can look at how abusers might use emotion-focused tactics to do that. So when we're talking about intimate partner violence, or you might hear it called domestic violence or partner abuse, basically we're talking about when one person is using different tactics to gain or sustain power and control over their partner. So that, of course, we all know about physical violence, sexual violence and abuse, psychological, and emotional abuse is one particular category of strategies that an abuser might use to gain and maintain that power and control over their partner. And when we're talking about emotional abuse, then we're really specifically talking about using their victim's emotions to hurt and manipulate and otherwise sort of use their partners. Emotional abuse is sort of a broader category of some different types of abuse. So I consider verbal abuse to be one commonly understood category of emotional abuse. And this is where the abuser is using their words, potentially spoken out loud. Of course, now it could be written, over text, chat, any sort of technology facilitated abuse. And that's really using hurtful words to control and hurt the victim. But there's other different types of emotional abuse that can also be a lot more difficult to understand and detect. So we all kind of can, we're somewhat more easily recognize when verbal abuse, for example, name calling, putting somebody down. But there's often much more subtle and covert types of abuse that could be considered emotional abuse. Especially this is where we really think about sort of playing on the person's emotions to make them feel bad about themselves. One type of emotional abuse that has been getting a lot of press time recently is called gaslighting. And that's where the abuser is using these emotional abuse tactics to sort of do crazy making or make the person to question their own experiences. So they might be experiencing emotional reactions to things that their partner is doing, but then the abuser is coming back and saying, well, I didn't do that, or that wasn't that hurtful. And then I think one other category that I want to mention, I think there's more than what I'll mention today, but I think it's also important to talk a bit about emotional neglect. And we probably all have somewhat heard about the idea of neglect or potentially emotional neglect when we're talking about parents and children. But we can have emotional neglect in romantic relationships as well. It's a little bit harder to define because there's no set definition of exactly what emotional needs people should be meeting within the context of their romantic relationships. But basically, the idea here would be that if one partner expresses their emotional needs and the other partner is really not paying attention to them and sort of willfully withholding emotional support from their partner. And I do want to make note here that in particular, it's a pattern. So it's not just a one-time thing. We can never, as I'm sure you talk about a lot on this podcast, we can never 100% all the time meet the emotional needs of a romantic partner. That wouldn't be healthy to expect that. But this is really a pattern of emotionally withholding support, validation, and any sort of meeting of the emotional needs that that person has.
Yeah, well, that was very thorough. And I appreciate all of the explanations, especially that it has to be a pattern and not a one-time thing, because things do come up. And somebody just hired me who's going through a very verbally abusive relationship, but the partner is accusing him of being the one in the wrong. And so, you know, one of the things I told him was, it's never just one person. Like, the fact that she's yelling and accusing and name calling and judging and criticizing, and how we as people go, you know, hear those attacks and what we do when we're triggered, this is all. So I just want you to kind of go through like how this kind of abuse impacts people going in a relationship. And in this particular case, both partners really needed to do the work, but only one was saying you're the problem. So I'm sure this comes up a lot.
Mm-hmm. And I do think that that is one part of emotional abuse that adds to the complications of it and the effects and the ways that it can impact survivors of emotional abuse, because it's a little bit harder to deny physical abuse. If you hit somebody, it's a fact, it's observable. Now, that's not to say that abusers don't deny their physical violence, but there is, I think, a lot easier for perpetrators to sort of dodge accountability for the emotionally abusive tactics that they're using in those relationships. So one of the aspects of my work that I don't think that you mentioned in the introduction is a campaign called the See the Triumph campaign. This is a social media campaign, very much connected to the book that you mentioned, the Triumph Over Abuse book. But basically it was research with many, many survivors over the course of different studies and different years, survivors who were out of any current abusive situation, but they had past experiences. And I bring that research up to say that it really helped me to learn a lot about the long-term and short-term consequences of emotional abuse through that research. Because we heard from a lot of the survivors who participated in that research that sometimes the emotional abuse effects were even more complicated and difficult to heal from, potentially from some of the physical abuse that they may have experienced. Now, there's a whole spectrum of severity of physical abuse. So of course, that's not always the case. But if you have a broken bone, it's a pretty tangible healing process. Wear the cast for the period of time and hopefully regaining that strength, and the cast comes off and hopefully the arm is healed. But the effects of emotional abuse can be a lot more complicated. So some of the very specific effects of emotional abuse might include lower self-esteem, doubting yourself, especially if your partner has really contributed to making you think that your perceptions are not grounded in reality. There's a lot of feelings of shame, isolation, and loneliness. You may not be able to comfortably trust yourself. And I think that's a part that can really come up in the context of future romantic relationships. And then one other piece that I think is very common among emotional abuse that I'll mention right now is just a lot of confusion and sort of mental anguish. I think that it's really common when you've experienced emotional abuse. And I should say too, not only have I studied this, but I am a survivor of an abusive relationship that primarily involved emotional abuse. And I tend to probably be somebody who, ruminates on things. That's maybe a tendency of mine. But I think that there is a natural tendency in our minds when something is confusing or unresolved to replay it and try to make sense of it. And so in these emotionally abusive scenarios that people might go through, it's very common to keep replaying it, rehearing the thing that your abuser has said to you, because it doesn't make sense. So there's a lot of time that sort of goes into thinking about those experiences, trying to process them, and then getting confused because it doesn't make sense why somebody would say something hurtful or that's not true.
Yeah, wow. So thank you for sharing that you have also survived. I actually was going to ask you that because of your interest in this topic. And this is near and dear to my heart as well. And I also had a friend who was going through a really emotionally abusive marriage. And she used to come over and we used to get together with this other friend and she would check in with us like, okay, so is it normal that my husband buys all of these snacks when I've told him I have a weight problem and he shouldn't have any snacks in the house? And then he buys like two boxes of snacks because she would binge. She would eat the whole box and he would just deny that there was a problem and not listen. So there were like a million of those. And she would come up with acronyms for his behavior to kind of make light of it. And we'd all sit around laughing, but also say, this is horrible, get out of this marriage. And she finally left him. I'd like to address how difficult it is to leave an emotionally abusive relationship, because I know that it can take many times. I've heard seven times, because it's, you start doubting yourself for all the reasons that you mentioned, the self-doubt, the shame, the rumination, maybe it's me, maybe I should change. Kind of like the person I was telling you about who hired me, you know, I'm the problem because she tells me I'm the problem. And that could perpetuate for a very long time. It makes you feel terrible about yourself. Mm-hmm. So yeah, if you could address that.
Yeah, I can probably address that first by starting by sharing that I really resonate with that type of experience too, because I know for me, I didn't even really recognize my experience as abuse until really a lot further in hindsight. I look back and I think, wow, there were all these things that were happening that I didn't recognize. But I think what you said is exactly correct, that so often part of that emotional abuse is leading you to doubt yourself or the other person really presenting themselves like what they say and they think is the truth. And so I think that in an abusive relationship, the person who is being abused can get really disconnected from themselves. And so they, and I know I felt that way, you know, feeling almost like a shell of myself at a certain point and then recognizing it. And then from there, it takes a while to rebuild yourself and, you know, work on that courage if leaving is the right thing to do. And so I do think that it can really get to a point. This is something not just in my own experiences, but things that I've observed in my work and other people that I've known, is just that sense of like, I don't even know what I like to eat. You know, what kind of restaurant would I want to go to? Because always this person is making the choices for me because they are controlling in that way. Or if I say, well, I would like to go have, you know, this particular type of food, that you might get ridiculed for that, right? Or made fun of, or kind of poked at with the preferences. And so over time, it really chips away at that person. And I think that's something to look out for too. So we can kind of think about through our conversation today, thinking about people who might be listening, who might be at different phases in their journey with emotional abuse. So somebody might be in an emotionally abusive relationship and not even recognize it, but maybe they do feel like something's off. Other people may be recognizing it, but trying to figure out a plan potentially to leave. And then other people may have that experience in the past. Of course, there's people who may have no experiences with emotional abuse, but other people may have the experience of emotional abuse in the past, and be trying to make sense of it and heal from it. And I think I really appreciate what you shared about you and your friends and how you would support the other friend. Because I know that's a part of my story as well, is having somebody say to me, I can't believe that he spoke to you in that way. And all those questions that I had been having in my mind about, oh, is this normal? Am I, you know, silly for thinking this? Or am I stupid for thinking this way? Am I being too sensitive? That's a really common one in kind of along the lines of gaslighting, but also just kind of more broadly is like, well, you're just being overly sensitive. And so I think the importance of having supportive people around you, ideally, of course, that could be your friends, your family. Sometimes those people are not always the best support system in these kind of situations. And also reaching out for support from professionals like yourself, trained counselors, domestic violence hotlines, advocates, to help get that information. Because once people, I think, do start to recognize it and are able to identify and almost name their experiences as emotional abuse, it changes the perspective from this state of confusion to a state of clarity that's really helpful for moving forward.
It's a really hard thing to see when you're so far in it. It's also an option for people who really don't want to leave, that they can learn to honor and respect themselves sometimes in the relationship. I'm sure not always. So have you seen cases like that where people stayed and were able to sustain that relationship without feeling completely diminished?
Yeah, I think that's why it is so important to seek support and other perspectives outside of yourself. So if that is a decision that somebody is considering, it would be really helpful to talk about it with a trained counselor, a friend or a family member who has some knowledge about abusive relationships and the dynamics of abusive relationships. Because I will say one thing that we haven't touched on too much, but there are real safety risks involved in abusive relationships, potentially. And even in an emotionally abusive relationship where there has not been physical violence and abuse, the potential is always there. And so I always think first and foremost, people need to think about what their safety, their physical safety, and then of course their emotional safety. So I do think it's possible that somebody could find a way to stay in that relationship. And I think regardless of whatever anybody on the outside of that relationship might think, it has to be up to that person in terms of figuring out what works for them and what helps them to feel physically and emotionally safe and supported. Of course, an exception would be if there is, say, physical violence and there's children witnessing it, and that might be a different situation that may have to be reported to the authorities or Child Protective Services. But people, I think one of the parts, I'm glad you brought that up too, because whether somebody stays or doesn't stay, people often, survivors often, and people who are even currently in an abusive relationship, often have very complicated emotions and feelings toward their partner. So on the outside looking in, you might think, what does this person see in their partner? They treat them so horribly. But as you mentioned, even if somebody recognizes that the way that somebody treats them badly, they potentially still love and care for that partner. And one thing that I talk about from time to time is that, and this was certainly true in my experience, that most of the time, somebody who is abusive in a relationship, it's not 100% of the time. And so there might be moments, even if you think, if you're familiar, there's something called the cycle of violence, where you have the honeymoon phase, the tension building phase, and then the explosion phase. And so in fact, the sort of idea of a partner being positive and loving, or even just a phase of kind of neutral, I think can really add to some of the confusion for figuring that out. Because most likely if someone was 100% of the time absolutely horrible, you could never find any place of, you know, wanting to stay in that relationship. But if there are times, it doesn't mean that it's the safest and healthiest choice to stay, but it does make it harder to figure that out, because it's like, well, maybe it's not that bad. You know, I know this happened 2 weeks ago. My partner was calling me names or putting me down, or I just felt horrible the way they were treating me for a period of time. But the last couple of weeks haven't been that bad. And I think that that's more normal than we often talk about when we're talking about abusive relationships, and it adds to the confusion. So that is, again, why I think it's so valuable for, if you're in that situation, to seek out support or seek out information and resources. It may not even be talking to somebody right away. It might be, if it's safe, to do some Googling and look at credible sources of information online to kind of look and see that. But it certainly adds to the confusion. And to be honest, it adds to the confusion in the post-abuse recovery process. And even along the lines of the whole concept of your podcast, The Last First Date, even early in a relationship, that's what makes it so complicated, that you have that. I usually say abusive relationships and healthy relationships, they really often look very similar in the beginning. So how do we figure that out when you have a fight and somebody says something and it was hurtful? Was it abusive? Maybe, maybe not, right? And it's hard to really tease that apart because all relationships are going to have some challenges. So that's why it's really important to take those steps for people to educate themselves on the signs of abuse, to have other people that they're talking about their relationship with and getting that perspective. Because when we do have feelings for somebody, of course, we're a little bit biased, you know, toward wanting to see the best in them, but that can cause us to overlook some things that might be a red flag of an abusive and unsafe situation.
I'm hearing a couple things. One is the kind of sunk costs of relationships where you've spent a lot of time together. You have a house together. You don't have your own income. You have children together. Like there could be some reasons where you're afraid to leave and why you stay. And also ignoring the signs of abuse when things are going well. And I've seen that a lot with addiction issues when somebody's an alcoholic and can be really verbally and physically abusive when they're drunk, but then they're apologetic and I'm so sorry, I'll never do it again. And so one of the things that I learned when I got divorced, and I started learning about for myself what a healthy relationship looks like and what emotional unsafety or lack of safety emotionally mm-hmm. looks like, was that so much depends on the family of origin and what you witnessed, what was so-called normal to you growing up or even in past relationships. And so if you never experienced healthy communication, if it's familiar to you to have somebody scream and yell or call names or not explain things or get defensive or any of the ways that abusive conversations happen, then you keep pushing that line of what's okay and what you will tolerate, oh, you know, further and further apart, which is why my tip of the day is learn to say no, because you have to know your yeses and nos. But if you don't have these clear lines, you just kind of are chameleon and you adapt yourself to the other person's needs because it's familiar to you.
Let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. This episode is brought to you by Amazon Music Unlimited. You can listen to over 70 million songs and thousands of playlists and stations. Plus, you can now stream your favorite podcasts like Last First Date Radio. You can listen to any song, anytime, anywhere, on any of your devices. Get Amazon Music Unlimited for free for 30 days. Just head on over to getamazonmusic.com/lastfirstdate to learn more and claim this offer.
Let's talk about some ways that people can heal, especially if they have a whole history of abuse, whether from childhood on or just in the relationships that they've had romantically.
Yeah, I think that healing is such an important part to be intentional about, because as you said, without taking those steps to educate ourselves about our experiences and how they're impacting us and to heal from past abuse, we can get into patterns in relationships, and we may not even be setting ourselves up for the healthiest relationships that we can have. So in terms of healing from past abuse, I think everybody's journey is going to have some similarities and some differences. And so I think one of the really important first steps is just to set an intention that I want to work on my healing. People sometimes say time heals all wounds. And I think there's probably a little truth to time helping. However, there's also a need for some intentionality, especially if you've experienced something traumatic like abuse, whether, again, like you said, it's in childhood or past romantic relationships. For a lot of people, it's actually both or some combination or potentially other forms of abuse or abusive experiences like bullying. So really recognizing that intention. And I think part of that too is saying, well, why is this important to me? Because chances are, if somebody recognizes that need for healing, they're probably seeing in their life that there are ways that their experiences with abuse are impacting their current experiences. So maybe it's seeing a pattern of continuing to find yourself in the same similar relationship that's maybe not the healthiest of what you want for yourself. Or maybe you notice triggers that are happening for you. I know you mentioned that term triggers earlier, and that can be something that can come up that, you know, for example, early in a relationship, you know, people are still learning each other and learning about communication. And so a common example might be you send a text to the person that you're dating, and it just takes a little while longer than usual for them to respond. And if you have a history of being emotionally neglected, and or maybe somebody using manipulating the timeline on communications as part of a pattern of emotional abuse, that might trigger you into going immediately into thinking, oh, there's something wrong with me. I knew it. This person doesn't want to be with me, or just experiencing a lot of distress that, and it might be they just got tied up in a meeting or they got busy and it's harmless. And so, you know, I think that we have to look at those triggers and identify them. And that's a part of the healing process too. And I think healing can happen whether you're in a relationship or whether you're single. I think that if you are single and planning to date, or if you're dating, if you're in the process of dating but haven't found a serious partnership yet, it is really valuable to take that time to, just as you said, look at what are the things you want to say yes to in a relationship and what are the things you want to say no to. And I think you need to go deeper than, well, I would like somebody to be tall, you know, or to have a master's degree, or you know, a certain income level. It's okay to have that type of, you know, preference, or even potentially, you know, maybe a requirement for somebody about certain things like that. But really thinking more about, how do you want to feel with this person? What are things that you really would not want to have in a partner? So how do they treat people? Not just how do they treat you, how do they treat the wait staff when you're out at a restaurant? If you go to the grocery store, how are they treating the person at the checkout? You know, looking at those as really thinking about the kind of person that you want to have in your life and that you want to let get close to you. And I think we don't want to be like overly restrictive when we're thinking about putting together sort of a list of requirements in a dating situation, but it is important to think about what are your real requirements, or what are your real needs. And it makes it easier when you're in that situation and maybe struggling with, is this a relationship I want to move forward in or not? It's going to make it easier if you've thought about it before you have an actual person. If you're already in that relationship, I think very similarly, looking at the things that you're reacting to, are you seeing that your past experiences with abuse, are you having traumatic reactions? Are you getting triggered? But also maybe you're not getting triggered, you know, maybe the person is being intentionally hurtful, or maybe they're not considering your needs as well. And so again, I think a really important part of that healing process is seeking some kind of support. Of course, I'm a counselor by training, and so I think therapy is a really valuable form of seeking that healing. But it could be through books, through seeking online resources, through getting support from friends, through online support groups. There's a lot of online support groups for survivors. So it's really about reaching out for that help as well, and potentially giving yourself even sort of tasks or kind of self-directed, you know, assignments, like looking at building your coping resources, or specifically maybe working through challenging emotions or memories that you may have related to those past experiences of abuse. So, you know, I think there's a lot of different ways that people might proceed on their healing journey, but the intentionality is really where it's going to start, to say that this is something that's important to me and I want to work on this, because I think people's most important relationship is the one that they have with themselves. But the more that they have that healthy relationship with themselves, which healing from past experiences of abuse is a part of that, then the better position they're going to be to find that healthy relationship with somebody else.
Yes. Yes, on so many levels. So wanted to go over a couple of things. I think, you know, educating yourself on the signs of abuse is really important, and setting that intention is really important, and noticing the patterns. And often we don't see them ourselves. So getting outside supports, one of the first things I do with a client is look for patterns of relationships. What are the things that we're repeating and that we want to stop repeating? And because we don't see them, we don't realize we've been emotionally unavailable, or we've attracted emotionally unavailable partners, because we also have never spoken up. We've never felt comfortable with our voice and being heard, because people in our lives may have not heard us or have put us down. And so finding the right people who will listen, who will respect you. And that brings us to the must-haves and the deal breakers. And I love that you said, ask yourself how you feel, how you want to feel. This is something people don't even think about. There, it's all these character traits that have nothing to do with character. They're physical traits, even like, oh, that person must have a PhD. That says nothing about their relational skills at all. And so often people will end up attracted to somebody's intelligence, but realize that they don't have emotional intelligence. And without that, you can't have a relationship. Without somebody who's open and accepts feedback and is not going to take out their wounds on you. And so one of the things I do is in building this list, I do say, how do you want to feel emotionally, sexually, physically, spiritually? And then who does that person need to be in order to you feel for you to feel safe physically, spiritually, sexually, emotionally? So that person has to be a good communicator and know how to fight fair. Okay, great. That person has to be open sexually to exploring and not shaming, you know, so we built the list based on safety. And so I love that you brought that up.
Yeah, it's those deeper parts that are so important. It's really easy to focus on the more surface level things that lead us to be attracted to somebody. And those are certainly important and have a place. But if you're really looking for, as you say, your last first date, that is really setting the intention then of building a long-term, lasting, healthy relationship. And it may take some time to get there and to find the right person for that. But in a way, I think taking a long-term perspective helps in that situation, because you kind of have to think, okay, I can sort of tolerate this thing right now, but how will I feel if I'm, you know, 10 years into this relationship, 10 years from now, and this person makes fun of every choice I make in the movie that I want to see or the TV show that I want to watch? You know, it's like, maybe that's not a big deal to some people, but why can't somebody want to watch on TV, you know, what they want to watch, and just for it to be okay, right? And so, and that's just a kind of a silly example in some ways, but I think it's a tangible example of the kind of things that are really helpful to think through. And going deeper, if you're really serious, I think, about building that healthy relationship, especially after you've had an experience with abuse and not being treated properly in a relationship, you are going to benefit a lot, I think, from it. Really, it's, I think, shifting your mindset about what's important in a relationship. And it may mean that you expand or get rid of some of the other criteria, like if they're not taller than you, but they make you feel safe and cared for and appreciated, does it matter if they don't meet your height requirement? I mean, I don't know. I don't think it would. I'd much rather see someone in a relationship with, you know, somebody that maybe looks or has a different, you know, set of demographic characteristics, but somebody who really helps them feel seen and supported and cared for.
Absolutely. And well, I always say, when you're horizontal, height doesn't matter.
That's a good one.
So let's talk for a minute about the partners of somebody who's experienced emotional abuse, because they also need to be informed. What would you want them to know and do so that they can create that relationship that feels safe and healthy?
Well, I think it's a balancing act in some ways, because on the one hand, it's important to be understanding and supportive in the context of that person's past experiences with abuse. And then on the other hand, to not assume that every single thing is directly related to those experiences. That could be sort of a form of judging them or shaming them from those experiences. I think it would be helpful for somebody who, if you have not had that experience of emotional abuse or other forms of abuse, and you're in a relationship with somebody who has experienced abuse or other forms of trauma, to know that it's common. We think about these things because most people don't talk about them on a real regular basis, but you know, we think about these as very uncommon or sort of isolated experiences. But the reality is that many people in our world have experiences of abuse. And so just keeping in mind that this is relatively normal, There's nothing wrong with or unusual about your partner for having gone through this. It takes time. You know, you may or may not even know about the experience for a while, or your partner might tell you right away. And there's no, I think, set timeline. I would probably be a little bit concerned if somebody, even after being with somebody for a really long time, didn't feel comfortable sharing those experiences. But there's not any rules that say that you have to give the complete play-by-play of every single emotionally abusive thing that their past partner said or did to them. So really, I think for partners, it's important to give their partner the time and space they need to decide if they want to open up, what they want to share, to be validating that their experiences were abuse, that it wasn't their fault, that what they went through was hurtful, to be there to support them. I think personally in any healthy relationship, but it's especially true when we're talking about being in a relationship with somebody who's had an experience of abuse, to spend some time talking about what are your emotional needs? I mean, and that's, you know, you and I come at this from a professional perspective, so that probably wouldn't be a weird thing for us to say. Right. But, you know, people who don't have that, just, you know, kind of, how can I help you feel safe with me? Or, you know, what's your love language? That could be an opener for that. Most people kind of, I think, are somewhat familiar with the five love languages, or you can look it up really quickly online. But, you know, just what does it mean to you? Or how close do you want to be? How much time do you feel comfortable spending in this relationship? Really, that's important in any relationship. So I don't think that that's necessarily something that should be limited just if you have a partner who has emotional abuse in their past. But I think a deeper question that kind of goes a little bit beyond some of those typical questions that potentially are part of any healthy relationship is around if there's any potential triggers. So for example, if long periods of lack of communication, like not responding to text messages or phone calls, is something that was a dynamic in that abusive relationship, having some awareness about that, I think, can be really helpful. Or you brought up an example before of potentially substance abuse having been part of it. So it's not to say, oh, you never can have a drink again because your partner was in a relationship with somebody who was emotionally abusive, especially when they were under the influence of alcohol. But be aware that that might be a time when there's some triggers or some heightened sense of heightened sensitivity or heightened awareness. And just thinking about what are those triggers so that you as a partner, that's part of potentially supporting your partner and their emotional needs as well. And then I think relatedly to share back to help understand, well, this might be why I'm not always able to text you back right away. Or I don't really like texting, but what's one thing I can do to be more communicative in a way that would be helpful, and kind of what their needs are as well too, because of course in any healthy relationship there's going to be that sense of kind of sharing and a sense of balance and people knowing and understanding each other too. And so I guess the last thing I would say too is I think that just for any partners in any relationship, but especially if we're talking about a relationship where there's a history of abuse, gaining that self-awareness, working on yourself, the more you know yourself and have relationship skills in your own back pocket, like communication skills, being able to manage conflict in healthy ways, even coping strategies, that's going to be helpful as you navigate some of these murky waters that can come up in any relationship, but especially if somebody has significant and or maybe more recent experiences of emotional abuse.
Yeah, I think trauma is very common. I think in many cases, you're going to have both partners coming from some form of trauma, and sometimes they have no idea. So one of the things that came up for me, besides all the wonderful things you just shared, is that a lot of times people will blame their past for their behavior instead of taking responsibility for being an adult, for getting help that they need. They'll say, well, I'm this way because of my parents, or I'm this way because of my past relationships. So, you know, just keep giving me a pass, you know? So I really get triggered by that, because we're adults who really have the ability to help ourselves. We can't help how we were brought up or some of the decisions we may have made based on a lack of awareness and a lack of self esteem or whatever led us to do what we did in the past, but don't blame your past, take responsibility. Do you have anything to say for people who just constantly are blaming the victim mentality kind of thing?
Yeah, no, I really agree with you. And I was thinking a very similar thing. As soon as you started talking about that, I thought it's really about taking accountability. That would be something that I think, and genuinely, and not just an apology. It's easy to give apology. It's a little harder to follow up with working on it and changing behavior patterns. And so I think a green light in a relationship is somebody that you can let them know if they've hurt your feelings or if they've done something to upset you, and they can accept responsibility for it. And it's not a string of excuses, whether it's past experiences or blaming you, or, you know, blaming tired. I think it's one thing to explain and help understand, and nobody's perfect. That's the other part of this that makes it so complicated, you know, because none of us are perfect. We're all going to say or do things that are hurtful in the context of relationships. But there's kind of, you can hold both at the same time, sort of like explaining, but not excusing, and still keeping that accountability and showing your commitment to really working on it.
That's good advice. So finally, your final words of advice for anyone who wants to go on their last first date. And I actually, based on some of the things that you shared, I started to take note of some of the things that you've already shared, which are to work on yourself and your relationship skills, to learn coping strategies and conflict resolution skills, to take accountability for your own healing, and to look for somebody who takes responsibility for hurting your feelings and for how they behave. So do you have anything to add to everything that you've shared already?
That was a great summary of a lot of what we talked about. I think the one big one that helps all of the rest of those come together is take it slow. It really takes time to get to know somebody. I think it can take months before people get comfortable enough that you really start to see the real pattern of behaviors, whether it's a really healthy and positive pattern or potentially a toxic or abusive pattern. And so you can't always help how quickly you may develop feelings for somebody. But the more that you can sort of take things slowly and getting to know somebody, finding out about them, even potentially how much time you're spending, you know, kind of intentionally, staggering the time that you spend with somebody so that you kind of prevent yourself from going too deep, too fast, and find yourself in a situation. So going slow, I think, would be the best overall way to help kind of set your relationship up for success and be able to recognize those other pieces as well.
Yeah, it's so important, especially if you have a history of diving in and not seeing the signs. Mm-hmm. And I think people get sexually involved so quickly and then they lose sight of anything because they're bonded. And so I always say, take it slow so you can go fast. You know, so it's the slower you go at the beginning, the faster you can go after that. I've had so many clients who have said, you know, we're doing so much inner work before I'm even dating. And I said, yeah, don't worry. As soon as you get out there, you're going to be so much better at this because we need to heal first. Otherwise, you just go out there and keep repeating patterns. So this has just been, we could talk for 10 hours on this topic or more, but we do have to end. I just love this conversation, Christine. And if you do have a free gift for us. So if you can share a little bit about what your free gift is, that would be great.
Sure. Well, we have a number of free resources that can be requested, it's just providing your email, but through the See the Triumph website. So seethetriumph.org. And if you go to the menu, one of the main ones I would direct you to are the See the Triumph workbooks and facilitator guide. And so those are based on some of the resources that we created through the See the Triumph campaign, and around helping survivors really process some of their past experiences with abuse.
Awesome. Well, that sounds really helpful. And as I said, so many of us have experienced abuse. It is something we can heal from with the proper support. You can really go on to have healthy relationships and go on your last first date. And so thank you, Christine, for doing the work that you do and for being such a font of information on this topic. Really appreciate you.
Absolutely. I really enjoyed our conversation too. And just always appreciate when people are raising awareness of this issue in forums like this.
And thanks everybody for listening. If you love our show, please Give us a high rating and review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. Let your friends know about us. And as always, here's to your last first date.
If you are ready to get unstuck, gain new tools, become more empowered, and finally find your last first date, I'd love to talk to you. Fill out an application to be considered for a complimentary half-hour love breakthrough session at lastfirstdate.com/application.